Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces Podcast, episode 171, with Helen Chamberlain, a wonderful chat. I feel like Adam Buxton at the moment, because I'm recording wild. I'm currently, let me paint the scene, I'm sat, I've been walking for about 30 minutes or 40 minutes, and I'm up a canyon in LA, Runyon Canyon. It's where all the British people go when they visit, and they always post a picture on Instagram from Runyon. Then they go and eat at Earth Cafe and post a picture there. It's very a British industry type thing, but it's beautiful up here. So I'm looking down on a winding canyon path with hills in front of me, kind of dry hills, but with dark green trees and bushes, like desert-like. But then in the background is the city of LA, rolling out until you can see the sea in the far distance. It's about 8 a.m. in the morning here. I like to get up early and come for a stroll. I tell myself it's for a nice health thing, a nice clear your mind, but in reality, it's when all the dog walkers come out, and I proper love dogs, and I don't have one, so I just come and look at all the dogs, and I smile at them, and I smile at their owners, and then I get on my way. But yeah, I'm recording this. What day is it? It's Wednesday. So on the day, obviously it's been out a while in the UK, but on the day the Hugo White episode has gone out, and that's gone down the tree. In fact, on my walk up here, I've been listening to Hugo on Hardcore Listing. So if you enjoyed last week's episode with Hugo White of the Maccabees, then check him out on Hardcore Listing. His topic is fantastic. He's picked his top five stories behind songs, and it's been fascinating. There's a chunk at the start where they're just going through, as a bonus bit, a load of songs that have got stories that are different to the interpretation. So a love song that's actually about something dark and things like that. And yeah, it's been a great listen, so I recommend you check that out. What have I got to tell you about? Oh, we've done the Dublin live shows. You don't have to hear me plug them any longer. And We Are Lizards. So yeah, we did the live podcast in Dublin. Surprise guest was Blind Boy Boat Club from the Rubber Bandits, and Chris and Stu from Hardcore Listing. And then me, Blind Boy, Chris, Stu, Leagues, and numerous others all went out drinking until 3 a.m. in Dublin, despite the fact that we had a drunk cast to record the next day. So the drunk cast also went well. It was a Hardcore Listing drunk cast, so that'll be going out on the Hardcore Listing podcast feed, but I'll tell you when that happens. Me, Chris and Stu started at midnight in Dublin and we drank till 3 in front of a live audience. Then I went back to the hotel and slept for a few hours because I had to be up at 5:30 to get back to the airport to get our flight home. And Chris and Stu barely came back to the hotel. They didn't get any sleep. They were an absolute mess on the plane. It was a joy for me to watch on my 2 hours sleep, feeling like a million bucks to see the state of them two idiots. So they'll be coming out soon. I'm not sure when I'm going to be putting out the live Distraction Pieces podcast. It might be the best live one we've done. I don't mean to overhype it, but the audience questions and engagement was absolutely amazing, and got some really emotional moments. So that was good. But the reason I'm not sure when I'm putting out is because I've got so many good guests coming up, and I'm not going to tell you about any of them. In fact, next week's guest, I'm not going to tell you about, because there's just that. We recently, you may have seen online, we recently broke 10 million downloads, which is mind-blowing for a little British podcast with me sitting and chatting to people. But because of that, and because of how well the Eddie Izzard one has gone down, and the Soad McKennitt one has been hugely kind of acclaimed, I'm getting tons of really big names asked to come on. And if all the names that have asked recently actually come through by the end of the year, your minds are going to be blown by the calibre of guests coming up. So because of that, I'll probably put the Dublin one out as a bonus podcast on a Friday or something. Because, I said, generally at the moment, between now at the end of October. I think I've got eight lined up, and they're all really good guests that I'd kill to have on. So it was amazing that they're all approaching me now. So that's weird, isn't it? Anything else to tell you about? The club night went great. Huey Morgan came down and was absolutely amazing. He may have had to sneak off early because he got excited when I dropped Anthony up, and there might have been a smell of drugs in the DJ booth. I'm not saying anything, I'm not confirming anything, but there was a rumour that someone was smoking, not only smoking in the venue, but smoking. I mean, it's Huey from, what do you, I mean, come on. But yeah, anyway, that was lovely. And we're back there in November. I'll confirm the guest soon. And I should mention that we're brought to you by Speech Development Records. As I'm in LA, it's all sunny again, so it makes me reminisce of the wonderful impact and reaction you guys gave to our Dark Summer range. The sunglasses I'm wearing now sold out three times, I think. And the swimwear, all just, you lot have gone crazy for. A few sizes and that have sold out. There's still some stuff left, so head over there. Another thing, I've had a lot of people recently buying merch out of guilt, and I encourage that. I've had people message me saying, look, I'll be honest, I've stolen your music for years, and then you've just spent the last 3 years giving me free podcasts, and that's made me feel guilty for stealing your music, so I've gone and bought some merch. So again, I encourage that. I'll take your guilt money if it means I can sit up canyons in LA like a big shot. Yeah, so that's about everything, I think. I don't know if there's anything else I need to tell you. This was a wonderful chat. Helen Chamberlain has been one of my favourite people for ages. I was always a fan of Soccer AM, and the first time I went on, we really hit it off. And when she left Soccer AM, before it was announced, the two people apparently that she messaged about it were me and Stevie Graham, because we were two of her favourite guests, and we'd just really hit it off. So as soon as she messaged me, I was like, well, let's have a podcast chat then. If I'm not going to be able to come on and hang out, let's hang out on the podcast. And I got to go down to a farm, and we talk about it a lot. There's a lot of interruptions in this episode. In fact, there's a bit where the sound quality will drop because a dog turned off my recorder. But because of the drama of the Ben and Jerry's episode that I had to re-record, I now have a backup recording going. So I didn't notice for about 10 minutes that a dog had jumped up and turned the recorder off. It's not it's just a touch button. It's not a complex thing. It wasn't intentional sabotage attempt. But yeah, so I met all of her dogs. I met the pigs, the horses, the llamas, the donkey. In fact, I think it was a llama. Is it a llama or a... Yeah, it was a llama that's in the Polaroid that we took. Helen has turned around completely and isn't visible. But her llama is... I think his name was Moo. I'm not sure. I might have made that up. So we had a lovely time. I plan on going back to the farm and visiting whenever I'm allowed, because it was a wonderful place to visit. And we chatted everything. We went off on all sorts of tangents, and it was a wonderful chat. So I hope you enjoy it. I'll be back at the end. I don't know why. Just it feels like it'd be rude to just end it, wouldn't it? Because I'm not going to tell you who next week's guest is, because I'll tell you that story, actually. I was meant to be out here in LA and New York, a week in LA and a week in New York, and I've had to cut it down to a week between the two, because next week I had two guests offered to me that are cracking, and I was like, right, I'm out here working, I'm not on holiday, don't worry. But yeah, I was like, okay, I'll come back early, because the guest next week is so good and so exciting. So yeah, I'm not going to tell you though, because I've not recorded it yet. So I fly back on Sunday, I land on Monday morning, I go to straight from the airport to a screening, then straight from the screening to record the podcast. So I'm going to be a mess, but again, it's constant hustle, ladies and gentlemen. And any other good podcasts I've been listening to. I've been catching up on hardcore listening on this trip. On previous trips to LA, I listened to Brian Gittins and Friends, but I'm all up to date on them. So yeah, hardcore listening has been great of late. So check that out. Yeah, I'll see you at the end. This is episode 171 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with Helen Chamberlain. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. We're absolutely fine with some doors open, some noise. That's the beauty of it all. I'm rolling, and I'm with Helen Chamberlain, and a lot of lovely animals.
Lots of animals, yeah.
How are you today?
I'm good.
It's lovely here. I mean, straight off the bat, I need to address the four dogs who are going to be probably featuring at some point in our conversation.
I'll be very surprised if one of them doesn't bark.
I feel I've won three of them over. And it's just Pudge. It's just not completely convinced yet.
Oh, won three of them. I thought you said run three of them over.
No, I've won three of them over. I think three of them are on side, and they've sat on me, and we've played. Yeah. But there's one that's still not quite sure. So
yeah, Pudge is she's an old Romanian street dog, so it's going to take more than just a hello girl.
Hello, aren't you nice?
Win her over, because she would have been noosed and dragged at some point, and then she was in a kill shelter, which is a bit of a contradiction in terms, because they take them to these concrete little rooms. All they have is a pallet to sleep on.
Oh, wow.
Wheeze and poos where they are. They're just throwing a handful of biscuits every now and again, and then they just randomly shovel them to death when they can be bothered, or throw the small ones to the big ones. This is not the way to start a
good
podcast.
Good Lord, no, it definitely is. That's not the way. That's ridiculous. But all your dogs are rescue dogs,
they
right?
They are all rescue dogs, yeah.
Two are Romanian.
Yeah.
And it is a fascinating one. We were discussing briefly before, and it's fascinating in Romania, the amount of street dogs, because they were recently under a dictatorship, and they went from all living in fields to being moved into high-rises.
Yeah.
And it meant that no one could take their dogs with them, so all the dogs were kind of left wild, and then they bred.
Yep.
And there's a huge amount of street dogs out there. And in certain areas, when I've been out there, they're kind of, the communities take it upon themselves to feed the dogs, to look after the dogs. They're seen as their responsibility as such. But, you know, that's still, there's going to be a lot that need rescuing and need.
They reckon there's 3 million.
Wow.
But what's good is charities now are realising that if they keep rehoming the stray ones, that There are more stray ones and more stray ones and more stray ones. So what they're actually doing is neutering street dogs. So even though that it sounds bad, we take them, neuter them, and put them back on the street. But
no, it's getting that under control. And
otherwise the problem just perpetuates.
It's
constantly.
It's the never-ending issue or contradiction or problem with animal rights. And we'll talk a lot about animals because you've got a lot in the field, and we've just had a good stroll around, and you're a vegetarian, so you're not, it's not like you're on board with animal rights, this kind of thing. But I always remember hearing in America in particular with the wild boar, there's a legal requirement each year to kill a certain amount because all they do is eat and fuck.
Most animals just
breed and breed and breed and breed. Yeah. So that makes sense on the street dogs that they will just keep breeding and breeding and breeding. Yeah. So to get that under control in some way so that they can be looked after and so that they can live reasonably makes a bit of sense.
We anthropomorphise way too much with animals.
Yeah.
Look at his little face. Yeah. You know, no, you're absolutely right.
It blows my mind that we still persist with asking and watching your name despite 100% record of not getting an accurate answer. No dog has ever answered with what his name is. They're always just confused at your please.
It's the tone, although dogs do have expressions. Fanny's expression now, that's Fanny she's in the biscuit shop.
Yeah,
she does know. They do know words. If Fanny's pesking, she's always pesking for snacks. If I say, go on then, go to the biscuit shop, she takes herself in there. She won't shut up now until I get her a biscuit.
That's okay, you get her a biscuit.
So, yeah. And now we've actually established that I have a dog called Fanny.
Yep, so, yep. So we've covered Fanny and we've covered Pudge, and we'll get to the other two. I mean, who's in charge? It's not a Fanny that's in charge, is it?
No. Spud is the original.
Is the leader of the pack.
Yeah, but he's not, though. He's a little Jack Russell, yeah. So I just have to make him think he's leader of the pack.
Yeah.
Right, everybody's got their biscuits now. Can't guarantee relax. Fanny's not going to go back to the biscuit shop and shout again, though.
I love it.
Right.
I love it.
Close the biscuit shop door, which is just a utility. Oh, God, I don't have a biscuit shop in my house.
Yeah, so you've given that illusion. So
yeah, it's just the utility room where I keep the dog food.
So where did you get involved with this Romanian charity? Because you go and volunteer with them a lot as well, right?
I do. I go down a couple of times a week. Chimney Farm International Dog Rescue, just down in Guildford. They started off, they've not even got charity status yet because they're too busy actually rescuing dogs. Couple of girls went over to Romania in 2014 to rescue 8 dogs. I think they ended up coming home with 30 or something. And it just went from there. And they got a beautiful premises. A lovely writer, gave them half of her house that's got stables and acres. Amazing. So they've got all the pooches there. And they rescue them from Romania and Spain, France even. Every now and again, you do get people going, well, what's the matter with rescuing dogs from the UK? You have to go, oh, it's like people. The damn dogs don't know they're Romanian.
They
don't have a house. They don't have any food. And they do rescue UK dogs, but just they're not all on the street like they are in Europe.
No, exactly. And it's the fact is, in the UK, if we had as much of a problem with street dogs and dogs needing rescuing, then the first solution would be putting more restrictions on breeding and cutting down on all these dogs being bred that aren't healthy and aren't needed, but just they cost a lot of money and there's a lot of industry in it. It's like, right, well, that's the problem, not the dogs that are being rescued are from Romania. That's not where the problem lies.
See, this is why you're kind of this bit of this. You have answers to everything.
Logic.
Don't you?
I'm a slave to logic, and it's not always a good thing, but it helps at times. But I mean, you literally live on a farm, and we've just had a lovely walk round, and it's amazing. How did that all come about? Like, what made you decide to live on a farm? And how did you build your collect? Because the collection of animals is vast. I've seen llamas,
alpacas,
three of the coolest, scraggliest looking pigs I've ever seen in my life.
You'll find their mangalitsa wild boar.
Of course.
But yes, they're pigs.
Yeah. A lot of chickens, some weird ducks that look as if they're cartoons because they run with their arms down in a funny little... like Aardman animation.
If you stop and think about that, all ducks run with their arms down because they're their wings.
Yeah.
If they were running with their arms out, that's flying. They're runner ducks.
Yeah.
So they're very upright.
Proper upright.
Yeah, they're upright. Yeah, so I've got some ducks, turkey, some geese, and lots of funky chickens, things like Appenzeller Spitzhaubens that have got cool hairdos.
They have the best haircuts.
They do. And good black and white spots as well. So, yeah.
Where do you draw the line on naming the animals?
Oh, yeah.
Because you can't name all of them, right? I know, you know, if you've got 3 pigs, you can name 3 pigs. If you've got a couple of alpacas, if you've got a lovely donkey that was coming over for a chat earlier, you can name them. But when there's like 30 chickens or something.
They don't have names. No, the big things have names.
Yeah.
But no. They tend to have names that find them. I don't sit there and think. It's like my pigs are called Sid because he's special needs Sid. He's blind.
Yeah.
And then there's Penis.
He was stumbling around amazingly. Sid, he proper like with. I'd met the other two, and then Sid just stumbled out of his little his hut, just
his pig arc.
His pig arc, right? I don't know.
I like the way that I said, and then there's Penis, and you went back
just straight
to Sid.
On. Yeah. It's like, let's leave that hanging, quite literally.
Yeah, I've got a pig that he's got a prolapsed penis, so he's just called Penis. It just identifies him because his penis is hanging out all the time.
Yeah.
And then there's Blue, who's a really friendly, and when I had 80, mangalits or wild boar, because I rescued them all from a farm that was closing down. And she was sprayed with a blue spot because she was super, super friendly. So yeah. She's just called Blue, and that's it. Yeah.
And I like how they're all kind of like the horses and the alpacas were in the same...
In the same field.
In the same field. And just more the fact that there's so much space for everyone. Everyone seems, yeah...
It's funny how you say that, because when you said you live on a farm, I was going to interrupt you and say it's actually a small holding, because right. If you say, oh, yes, I live on a farm, and then someone comes around who really lives on a farm, who has 485 acres, and they say, how many have you got? And I go, yeah, six. So it's just a small holding, but it's a 3-acre field, a 2.5-acre field, then a 1/2 acre of the garden where all the chickens and ducks are. Pip's getting properly hassled by
Come on, I'll put you back
Spud
down.
The Jack Russell.
Spud was up for a chat then.
Spud was up for a chat, yeah.
But yeah, it's nice again how it's all just... They are all... This sounds so ignorant and city folk, but how they are all mixing and it's all just everyone together. It's all there's not, here's where we keep the pigs and here's where we keep... everyone's kind of... They've got their own areas, but everyone's kind of...
Yeah, they all bumble about together, yeah. And I do get told, horses don't like pigs and horses don't like llamas. And I say, well, they'll have to get used to each other, won't they?
Yeah,
and I'll just put them in the field, and within 24 hours, any running around and noise making and fighting has stopped. And they go, okay, we all live here now.
And they get over it quite quickly.
Yeah, and the rheas. I do like the rheas, the big birds.
I was going to ask.
Ostrich type
birds. What they were called again. I just looked at them and thought ostriches of some sort, but rheas. And again, they're wandering around in there with a donkey. they were in with the llamas,
they're
weren't
in with
they?
The llamas,
and the alpacas were in with the horse.
Alpacas in with the horses, yeah. And at some point, I swapped them all over because they all eat different things. So the things that eat the weeds, well, that's great because then they swap the field, and then it all brings the grass through for the horses. So
that's perfect.
Yeah, it's all perfect. It's all
I
perfect.
Love it. I said, did you grow up on farms and stuff like
I
that?
I grew up
from
in
Somerset originally, right?
Middle of Somerset, so middle of nowhere. Grew up playing on farms. I had ponies and stuff, and just my childhood. It was just big old trees and haystacks and
Amazing.
Fields and outdoors, basically.
Yeah,
outdoors.
Yeah.
And I've never lost that. I've never had the urge. I visit the city, like city people visit the countryside.
Yeah,
and after 48 hours, they go, right, yeah, that's enough. Go back to the city. I'm the opposite. I can go to the city for a day and go, wow, isn't it great? And then by the end of the day, I go, I don't want to have brunch on a pavement with buses and taxis hooting by, stinking.
I'm exactly the same. I live in Essex in a little small town, and constantly you'll have people saying, oh, look, I want you living in London. Like, you're near it. It's like, yeah, no, I am near it. I'm near enough. I can pop in.
Yeah, I'm near.
I don't need to get any nearer than that. Otherwise, it's manic to me. I find it's stressful. But again, I love London. I love all the wonder there, all the excitement. Yeah. But I like leaving London as well and going out again.
And you have a garden. You've got your own garden.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have that in London.
No, 100%. You wouldn't come close to it. So what was how do you go from living on farms right in the middle of Somerset to a career in TV and presenting
accident.
And things like that?
My entire career has been an accident.
Yeah.
And everything, each job that I've had, I've by accident fallen into the next one.
Yeah.
So, I left school in Somerset, and for 6 months I was a VDU operator at Clark's Shoes, because everybody leaves school and goes to work for Clark's Shoes, because Clark's is in street in Somerset.
Perfect.
But I always knew, we went on holiday as a family to Pontins in Brixham, and I thought, God, this would be the best job in the world, because I looked at the blue coats, they were just knocking about, and it just seemed like the best job in the world. So I went for a job as a blue coat. And as it happened, the guy that was in charge of the Southwest blue coat interviews was the entertainment manager at the Pontins I'd been to on holiday. So he
Amazing.
Went, oh, hi, yeah, it's you, right. When do you want to start? And I had no talent. So everybody else was using, in those days, you'd use your holiday camps for your step up onto your showbiz ladder.
Yeah,
so
yeah, of course.
If you were a singer or a dancer or a comedian, because you had a captive audience every week. And every week you could do your act in the blue coat show. So I'm down
and you're
there.
You're working it and tightening it and building an audience.
All of that, yeah. And I didn't, I had, they said, you know, what's your thing? And I went, oh, there's nothing. Can you sing? Not really. Can you dance? Oh, God, yeah, I can wipe my feet on the rhythm rug. I'm like, but funky dancing. So all of this step ball change. I was doing it with a little funky beat in, and then,
brilliant.
And I've been told, no. But I just loved people and I just thought it was the best job in the world. So anyway, I went and did that.
I love that. I think I mean, they've died out a bit now, but things like that, and it's going to sound like an odd comparison, but things like a local band scenes and stuff like that are hugely important, because they're something that you can look at and go, oh, I could do that.
Yeah,
you might not look at TV and go, oh, I can do that, because that seems so far away. Whereas that holiday camp you went to, and then you saw them having a fag afterwards out the back, and they're not this hidden, masterful thing. You can look at it and go, I can do that. And then that leads you to then go, oh, I could also do that. And
this is what drives me so mad about X Factor, when you get somebody who's 18 or 19, and it's like if they don't make it on the X Factor, they're not going to make it at all.
Yeah.
And I think, well, if your passion is, they go, I'm doing this because I don't want to work in a supermarket all my life. You can still be the lead singer of a band.
Yeah.
You just might be a functions band.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You can still do it.
Yeah.
You can still do that for a living. And it just, this was what the same with Pontins, is there were singers and dancers and actors and comedians and impressionists. Yeah. And they were all doing their thing.
Yeah.
6 days a week. See, you only got one
it's
day off.
Easy to see in a supermarket that there's some people that are managers, some people that are two, and things like that. Whereas it's not easy to see in entertainment. It's either, as you said, with X Factor, it's either I'm number one or I can't be doing it. So no,
there's so much in between backing singers. I know there are some people who go on it who say I am a backing singer, was a backing singer, and I now want to be at the front. Fine. But you can still go back to being a backing singer and have a great life on the road with some great people.
Completely.
So stop all of that bullshit. It's nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing I think is the dangerous part in someone's persona or psyche, is when they feel they can't go back to those things and stuff like that. And that's the bit that I find just mind-blowing. I've been in this kind of industry for only just over 10 years now, and I've always had in the back of my head that I was really good working in HMV, and if I need to I can go back and I'll be really decent at that, because I was smashing that. There's not a but I'm screwy as pip, how could I work. It's like no one gives a shit.
In HMV,
no one's gonna care. It's not an issue, as long as you're good at what you do.
I was the same. So at Pontins, I just loved it and enjoyed it. And I just had a great time. And I did 3 seasons there. And what happened is, in the last season, they cut backs. They didn't have a separate DJ. So the band would finish at midnight and the DJ would come in and DJ until 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
Right, cut backs, no DJ this season. So the Blue Coats have got to do it.
I'm having some
issue there. I think one that the dogs might have paused the recording, but now I've got backup recording, so it's absolutely fine. Continue.
Okay. So with the cutbacks, no resident DJ. So I remember the entertainment manager sitting down and saying, we don't have a DJ this year, so Kevin, John, Gary, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, one of you's got to do Sunday. And I'm not one of those stomp women's lib people at all, but I just sat there and went, there are 3 girls sat here as well, 3 boy blue coats.
Yeah.
3 girl blue coats. Like, you just immediately said, Kevin, John, Gary, Monday, Tuesday,
and
Monday,
rotate.
And rotate, and then one of you do Sunday. And he went, all right then, you do Sunday. So I was the Sunday DJ.
Amazing.
Early 80s, massive. I used to clear the dance floor because I just played Depeche Mode, Haircut 100, Thompson Twins. I'd play all the 80s stuff rather than the 70s disco stuff. But anyway, when it got to the end of the season, the resident band moved to a show bar in Torquay, and they said, do you know any DJs? Because we need one. And they said, oh, actually, we know a female DJ. Oh, novelty, right? We'll have her. So this is the accidental career.
Yeah.
The fact I was a blue coat was an accident, because I had no talent. So it was only the fact that my entertainment manager was the guy that recognised me from being a holiday maker and said, come on in. The DJ thing was an accident by me going, excuse me, there are 3 girls here. And then the band going, do you know any DJs? Yes, female DJ. From there, I kept getting loads of private bookings. Come and do our wedding. Come and do this.
Oh,
never advertised DJ for years. Then I just got fed up with it. And I saw an advert for a sea lion feeder at Chessington World of Adventures. Yeah, I used to buy the stage. I used to buy that paper, the Stage and Television Today.
Yeah.
Because it made me feel like I was a little bit connected with stuff. Like I said, I had no talent. There was no.
Yeah.
I don't know why I used to read, but I know that person. They came and did gigs at Pontins.
I love it that when, like, particularly starting with Pontins, when they're asking what you can offer, it's literally availability.
Yes,
I can turn up. Other than that, but a lot of people can't do that. So a lot of people won't turn up or won't offer this. Yeah. So I can offer that. I'll be here.
You're right. People who were singers, they thought that sometimes they were a bit above going to do the gala day around the swimming pool and pushing people in and messing about and all of that.
And mutual friend, Stephen Graham, when I had him on the podcast, he was saying how he's always felt his job is actor and he can't be too precious over that. And there's a level of selection, but he always said, if I was a plumber and someone booked me to come and plumb the house, I wouldn't get there and go, nah, this house isn't good enough for me to plumb, really. I'm gonna go and sit at home until a house I want to plumb comes in. So... Yeah. You know, there wasn't that arrogance. It's that kind of, let's go and accept it.
I listened to that podcast, by the way. So, yeah, I heard it. And he's our mutual friend anyway. So, he's great. So all of that, I ended up as a DJ. Then saw this advert for Sea Lion thingy. So I contacted the old entertainments manager at Pontins. And he said, my agent knows everybody at Chessington World of Adventures because Dave Benson Phillips is one of their, he goes in and does a little bit of a, do you remember Dave Benson Phillips?
Yeah, of course
I do. The guy from whatever, not wasn't the broom cupboard, but whatever it was.
Yeah.
So I contacted him.
I saw him recently in a musical.
Wow.
Fantastic. Anyway, go on, continue. I can't remember what it was, I can't say any further. I can't give any more information. I can't remember. Yeah. It was a panto of some sort. I say musical, it was some kind of panto, but yeah, go on.
And he's never changed, Dave Benson Phillips. No. Never changed.
Exactly
from the
same.
The guy that was on kids' television, he's still the same
right now. I love it.
30 years later. So I got the job at Chessington World of Adventures by this guy who, knowing everybody there, went in. I mean, still had to go to meet them.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, you've got the job. I still had to go. But anyway, then I was feeding sea lions for a year or something.
Amazing. And is that theatrical, feeding sea lions? Like feeding them as part of a show rather than just you get up in the morning and feed them and...
It was a little bit of both because they were very conscious that they were a breeding group of sea lions and they didn't want acrobatic, trained. They were very aware that the reason why they had sea lions was kind of conservation and.
Right, yeah.
But because it
not
was.
Not as performers and not as.
Yes, but because it was connected to a theme park, there'd be a lot of people who'd protest that these animals were in cages and enclosures and not in the wild. But what did used to make me laugh is on the opening day of the season, people would march up and down outside Chessington World Adventures with placards with free the animals. And 200 yards down the road, there was an exotic meat seller who had a board outside his house saying, for sale, zebra steaks, ostrich meat. So... I used to think,
that's controversial position.
Yeah, alligator,
isn't it?
And it was all in his freezer and he'd sell it.
That's
so
amazing.
I had a perception of animals in cages before I worked at Chessington World of Adventures. When you realise that some of these animals, the reason why they roam 30 miles a day is to get food. So if somebody just pops it over the top of their enclosure, they don't have to roam 30 miles a day, so they'll sleep, so they'll kip. Plus, there was a team of international vets that used to come in, and these people learnt so much about the animals in captivity. They could then go abroad and help with the conservation programs abroad. So it wasn't all bung animals in cages. And also, Chessington World of Adventures didn't add any animals. They didn't get any from anywhere else and add them.
Right.
They just looked after what they had that was been there from the 70s or whatever.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'd come from different zoos already in the UK.
Yeah.
But things like that, when the giraffes went, they didn't get any more giraffes. Polar bears, they didn't get any more polar bears. So I kind of changed a bit with their attitude was, no, actually what they're doing is looking after these creatures and helping conservation products. And all these people with placards outside.
Oh, right.
Honk your horn to free the animals. And there was a guy 100 yards down the road with all dead ones in his freezer.
Yeah, so, and you're ignoring him for attacking these. But it is an interesting one because it's all about the balance, isn't it, right? Because, again, it's that thing as well with many animals. Oh, they should be in the wild. That'd be eaten. That'd be eaten very quickly by other animals. And that is nature, and that's fine.
Right, that's right.
But people don't like to face that a lot of the time. Yeah. So it's finding the balance. I completely agree. I think going out in the wild and catching animals and putting them in cages is a hideous thing.
Yes.
But there's a situation that's already there now. Do you know what I mean? As you said, if they're maintaining, if these animals are already here, you couldn't, they more than any wouldn't last in the wild because they've only known enclosures. So yeah. it is finding that balance.
And I think if some animals in captivity, their enclosures simply aren't big enough. Yeah. That's when you see that kind of thing, you can tell. But I think like you say, they did their best.
Yeah.
I haven't been there for over 20 years, so I don't know how many animals are still there now, but so there I was doing sea lions got fed twice a day, and what was happening is so many people were watching the sea lions being fed, and the zookeepers, bless them, zookeepers are quite a strange bunch.
Yeah, I can imagine.
They are quite odd set of people.
In what way?
They're quite they're 100% consumed with the animals that they look after.
Yeah.
And all people can fuck off.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And I think they're attracted towards that kind of job because maybe the personality that they are, they're not so confident around people, so they go and work with animals.
Yeah, yeah.
Because animals don't judge you.
Yeah, 100%. That makes sense.
So they were miking up one of the zookeepers, and he'd walk out, "These are the sea lions. They come from the Galapagos Islands. There are 23 species of sea lion."
Yeah. Natural entertainers.
So they wanted to showbiz it up without being, "Hi, here are the sea lions. Watch them jump through flaming hoops.
Yeah.
Flames.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And get fish." So the zookeeper would go out with his bucket and I'd go out behind him in a little wetsuit thing with a little microphone and, "Okay, hi everybody, and what's the difference between a seal and a sea lion? Anybody know?" "No, elbows and ears." Okay.
Brilliant.
"Sea lions have elbows and ears and seals don't."
Amazing.
Stuff.
It's good.
And introduce them and here are their names and this, that and the other. But so that was another job by accident.
Yeah.
And then from there, Nickelodeon, the kids' channel, who had Dave Benson Phillips as one of their presenters, the agent that he was with, they said, "Oh, we're just going to have some open auditions, send some people along." So he called me up and said, "Look, why don't you go along?"
Right.
And I'm like, "What the hell? What, for telly? Don't be stupid." And I was 27. I thought, I'm too old.
Right.
26, 27. But I went along to be nosy.
I think that's a great choice in so many different career things. There's so many things. I got in a habit a while back of saying no to things quickly, and then I went, "Hang on, imagine if you were still working in HMV, you'd go to have a look at least." So it was then I was like, I try and accept all the meetings that come in, even if I know it's nothing I want to do, but it's like, well, I don't really know how that works. It's going,
let's go and have a look at that.
That's fascinating.
And when I got there, I did go with somebody, but I can't remember who. And going back to Stephen Graham, like all those lovely stories when he turned up and his mate auditioned for the role.
Yeah,
and then they said, come on in. And then he got the part.
Come and have a go.
So, yeah, I went along and there were a room full of bright-eyed, bushy-tailed 16, 17-year-olds. They all had pigtails in.
Yeah, yeah.
Fresh out of stage school. And they all went in and were doing 2 or 3 minutes, and I could hear little bits of piano, and I could hear little bits of "jump forward, clap your hands, jump back." And I was going, shit.
This is
going
to be awkward.
Because I had a Tesco's bag with me, because the night before I'd gone,
some facts about seals and sea lions.
I didn't even think of that. I thought, right, I've got to be entertaining for 3 minutes. What can I do? I went, oh, growing cress. All kids love to grow cress. Have you ever grown cress on a wet piece of...
Yeah.
There you go.
I did that as a kid.
So I didn't have time to go through the stages of growing cress because I only thought of it the night before. So I went to Tesco's and I bought 3 pots of cress and I just got a pair of scissors and just trimmed them in various stages of growth. So started off with a, right, okay, it's the packet seeds. This is how you do it. I said after a couple of days or so, because I'm rummaging about in this Tesco's bag and I brought out this perfectly bought pot with Tesco's value, 29p on the front. Brilliant. And it had all been out of haircut. Yeah, so because it was just these white stalks, the lady behind the camera and the lady sat, they just started to giggle. And I said, you know, give it a couple more days and you get this. And it was a bit taller. And I said, then you end up with this and it's the cress. And I said, the best thing, you can eat it. And I just like pretty much just rammed the whole thing in my mouth. I was always like that at Brilliant. School. Yeah, just how can I get a bit of a laugh here? Yeah. I just eat the whole thing, dirt and it, dirt and all.
Brilliant.
So when I went out, the friend that I'd gone with said, you were in there longer than anybody else. And within a week, they phoned the agent on the way home and said we'd like her to come in. So within a week, I was on air, Nickelodeon, doing the links in between the cartoons.
That's insane.
It is insane.
And the beauty there is there was a room full of people that probably wanted it too much.
They all had talent.
And you were
talent.
There and didn't really care kind of thing. It's amazing how much that can help because they do have these factories of making people to be exactly like that. Therefore, where's the variation and where's the definition? When I got a role in a show called The Bastard Executioner, all medieval and that, and the feedback I got from my audition was like, it was a breath of fresh air because you just said the lines. And because it's medieval and it's British actors, they're all being all theatrical and being Shakespearean. Everyone was delivering everything as big and grand, and I just went in and not knowing what I'm doing, just went, I've learnt the lines, cheers. And they were like, it was so natural and this and that. It's like, well, that was the benefit of not being trained.
Yes.
And again, it's a similar thing there, I'd imagine. If you've been trained of how to act in an audition like that, then
from a stage
you're going
school,
to have trained how to act exactly the same as everyone else in that room. So you'll stand out more if you're going in and going, I popped Tesco's on the way. It's impressive.
I've chopped
up.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't supposed to be, and it wasn't supposed to be a comedy routine of, I've cut this cress on purpose. It was just shit.
Just
I haven't got any.
Way.
Shit. Let's, all right, do that. It might be funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
So within a week, I was doing some links. I was co-hosting with Janet Ellis from Blue Peter.
Yeah.
And then what did me a favour was it was coming up to Christmas and all of the other Nickelodeon presenters. So this is your Rick Adams.
Right.
Your Lucy Alexander.
Yeah.
Your Sarah Kaywood.
Yep, yep.
Munya and Yolanda. James Gilby. They all wanted time off because it was Christmas. I'm on telly.
Yeah,
I don't care. I was the only person who wanted to do New Year's Day.
I love it.
New Year's Day breakfast.
Yeah.
So it's the biggest audience of the year because kids get up early New Year's Day. Parents don't. So they're all just put Nickelodeon on and away you go. So every day you had to think of a phone in and a fax in. Mine was always stupid stuff. And there was one day, and you'd think, driving in, oh God, this is how long ago it was, a fax in. You'd have a fax machine.
Brilliant.
And stuff would come off and you'd read it out.
I love it.
So phone in and a fax in. I had my most embarrassing moment ever on the handover. So Rick Adams, do you remember Rick Adams? He did the big breakfast for a little bit with Sharon Swimmer.
The name rings a bell.
I'm sure I recognise him.
Yes, I do know him. I do. As soon as you said the
glasses guy. He was brilliant at Nickelodeon. He was the number one top presenter, Rick Adams. And he had a big thick book that he had all his ideas in, and it was all very, very produced. Even though you didn't have a producer, you had a guy out the back. That was used to be my daily challenge as well, to make the guy out the back laugh, because he was a miserable bastard. He was a proper narky, like hated kids, hated cartoons. He was on your talk back and everything was just grumpy and miserable. So I'd do anything to try. If I made him laugh, that was fine.
Won.
Day over.
Brilliant.
So Rick Adams have everything. And I remember reading his notes and he had timings down for everything. 10:15, British toe wrestling champion. And I'm sitting out the back. Can't remember if I'd done my shift or about to do my shift. and this beautiful girl walks in, and I'm looking at her, I'm looking at the time, and I'm looking at Rick Adams' notes, and I went, are you the British toe wrestling champion? And she went, no, I'm Brandy, I'm a singer. It was fucking Brandy. And I just went, oh God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
That's beautiful.
I'm so sorry. I did say if anybody knocks on the door.
It's fine. I will pause briefly. In fact, I'm just going to keep commentating. The dogs are barking. That's Pudge that you can hear. Pudge. Pudge. Oi. I'm just going to keep recording. I decided to just keep going and commentate on what's
sorry,
going Pudge. On.
That's right. It's a guy with some turf for me.
Of course it is.
Yeah. Well, there's a local turf place up the road, and if they've got any left over, they just drop it at my gate because they know
amazing.
That I just use it somewhere in the chicken pens.
I saw you years ago buying up all the cress. We'll sort her out next time. So yeah, you accuse Brandy of being the world
toe wrestling
champion.
Brilliant. I know. Really embarrassing. Really embarrassing. So then there was one day one weekend morning when my phone in that day was, what are you most proud of?
Yeah.
Can I stop those dogs from barking?
Yeah, go ahead. You see, this is a real podcast. There's dogs, there's... I think the dogs are currently arguing with either the donkey or the llamas. Who are they arguing with? Is it just each other or?
No. The farrier. I've got the farrier here doing the horse's shoes, and the farrier has brought his own dogs.
Right.
So they can see his dogs through the gate and wanted to go and say hello. And that would have gone on forever.
I love it. I was just about to say, just when you mentioned about the how long ago it was with faxes being part of it, it made me think of how people don't understand any of that technology now because of how we've come along.
It's a whole generation of people.
And my brother, he works in a library, and he had someone come up to the counter and say, the photocopier isn't working. It's only printed in black and white. I want colour. And he's like, it comes and has a look. He presses it. It's pressed colour and it comes out in black and white. He's like, this is weird. He checks the ink and all that, presses it again. This is odd. And he lifts it up and looks. And it's a black and white picture. And he says to the person, you're photocopying a black and white picture. And she literally just went, I want it in colour. I had no idea was putting a black and white picture in and going, I've pressed colour and it's not coming out in colour. It's like, wow, that's just, we've lost.
But do you know what? I can
technology has made us even more confused.
How somebody could do that.
Get that
take
confusion.
A black and white and say, just press the colour button.
I'd like
and
it in
surely
colour,
it'll
please.
Come out in colour.
No, it's not magic. It's just replication. It's quite a simple technology.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So you were on Nickelodeon.
On Nickelodeon one weekend, and my phone in was Blow Your Own Trumpet. And some kid phoned up and he said, oh, we won our five-a-side football tournament this weekend. And I said, oh, brilliant. Where'd you play? He said, in goal. I said, oh, who's your team? He said, Spurs. I said, so you want to be the next Ian Walker then?
Yeah.
One of the heads of Sky was watching. Well, his kids were watching and he went, whoop. Okay. Yep, that's live. All right. So she knew that the Spurs goalkeeper was Ian Walker.
Football, yeah.
Right, let's get her in. So... the next minute, I'm sitting in front of them all at Sky Towers. Fanny, shut up. And having this quite awkwardish conversation because I'm a freaking Torquay United fan, and Sky only had the Premier League,
right? Of
and
course.
And I remember this. They're all sitting there, head of Sky Sports, deputy head of Sky Sports, producer and executive producer of the very, very, very early soccer AM. And then they got to who do you support? And I had a nanosecond to think about it. And I've gone, right, well, I'll just say Spurs. Because if I say Torquay United, they're just going to go, what?
Oh, well, you don't. Yeah.
We only do Premier League.
So,
to be honest, I didn't even know what I was sat there for. I'd never watched Soccer AM. Like, nobody had.
Yeah.
Sky was only a year old or something. And I thought, shall I lie? And then, of course, that part of me went, I can't lie. I cannot lie. So I said, Torquay United. I'm a Torquay United fan. There was this what felt like half an hour silence. Yeah. No giggling though, which was good. Half an hour silence, and then he just went, "All right, but you keep up with the Premier League." I said, "Well, yeah, just a general football fan." Now, why didn't realise at the time? If I had a said Spurs, I wouldn't have got the job because I initially was presenting with Russ Williams, a Spurs fan, and Gary Stumpy Stevens,
right,
an ex-Spurs player and Spurs right. fan. So if I said Spurs, they would have probably said, "We can't we have can't three have Spurs
just,
all
it's
on
just
the
a Spurs
sofa.
Show." Then,
yeah,
I love that. So, yeah. So how was that in the early days? Then suddenly jumping into football TV, and again, Sky was very much a different beast at that point, or definitely a big change from Nickelodeon. In yeah. that it was a lot more serious, and
yeah.
it's weird now that we've had Soccer AM for so long that we know what Soccer AM is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's an odd beast before it exists. Do you know what I mean? If you're pitching it, I remember I won the time I was on. God, I can't remember his name. It's awful. But I was on with McLovin from Superbad.
Yeah,
and he was lovely. And every time it was going off of us, he was just asking me what the hell's going on. He was loving it, but he was like, "What is this show?" I'm like, "Well," because again, the thing I've always felt with Soccer AM, and where I've got friends into it in the past, and even my mum became a big fan of it, was the Soccer AM part. It's deceptive because it's not really. It is a football show, but it's not really a football show.
It's an entertainment
it's about
show with
comedians
football in it
and musicians and music and everything else, and yeah. It's entertainment that happens to be, based around a football in some way.
We've had, so you said McLovin.
Yeah.
Who was the other guy? Who was Stifler?
Yeah,
So we had Stifler on the show.
Brilliant.
Who, same thing, we got to a commercial break and he turned around and he said to the other guest on the sofa, "Is this really on air? Is this really happening now live? Do they not just take all of this away and edit it down to 20 minutes of... proper television? Is this really?
So, no, this is the
this
show.
Is when it was like 3 hours long,
yeah,
and
yeah.
We had to fill it. That was the whole idea of Soccer AM in the first place. Is they just launched Sky Sports 2, I think. And they didn't have anything to put on it.
Yeah.
So they did 4 hours of Saturday morning, and in the early days when it was me and Russ Williams and Gary Stevens, the three of us were sat on a bench, and we used to do newspaper reviews, and we'd do. Traffic reports.
Oh, wow.
There were always cones on the M8. Always,
yeah, of course.
A little bit of weather, and it was. We wouldn't move. You'd have to be chipped off the bench at the end of
so
a four-hour show.
So it was essentially what Sky Sports Centre is. Essentially, it's more a here we're filling the morning.
Oh,
here's some news. Here's some stuff.
Yeah. And then after a season, they found Tim Lovejoy from somewhere. Yeah. He'd worked on The Big Breakfast, and he came in and he said, "I want to make a show." When you used to watch the FA Cup final, the whole morning was about building up to, you'd see the bus coming down the street and everybody going up Wembley Way. And there was a real atmosphere. And he said, "I want to make that in a show." And they just went, "Take Soccer AM and do it." Because they'd just bought the Football League, the Ensley League as it was.
Right.
And they moved Russ Williams to front that, to head that up. I think Gary Stevens went on and did something else. So, and the number one thing on Tim's list was to get rid of me because I was rubbish. Well, I didn't get anything to do. I wanted to do funny stuff.
Yeah.
I just wanted things to be funny.
Yeah.
So I'd try and be funny and everyone would just look at me.
And be very serious.
And I'd go, "Oh God, all right, that didn't work. All right, fine." So Tim came in, and also because he just said, "She doesn't do anything. She links to commercial breaks. That's it. And if anybody says anything mildly funny, just giggles."
Yeah.
Because I was like, brilliant, someone's saying something funny. So it was number one thing on his list to get rid of me. Then he came in as presenter, realised that if you haven't been in front of the camera before, he relied on me more than he realised he was going to have to because he kept screwing stuff up.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I was free of these shackles because the show was then became a bit like it. In the early days, a rough diamond, and Tim and brought Fenners in and stuff, and then it just boomed into the creature that it used to be.
Yeah.
Of no one had ever seen anything like it. The Big Breakfast was a bit like it with Denise Van Outen and Johnny
and
Vaughan.
Johnny Vaughan, yeah, yeah.
That kind of whole zoo mentality of it didn't matter if crew member was caught in shot. All of that sort of stuff was just happening. Chris Evans had just boomed as well.
It became the first show, and more so than The Big Breakfast, that the crew all became part of the show as well. And I'd never seen it. I know when I was watching it the most, it was you and Tim, and yeah, you literally, you'd have Fenners every week. You'd have everyone.
But they were all characters as well.
Yeah.
David the Letterman, who used to bring in the post.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Sheephead, who used to do the light drizzle, the weather, and Robbie Knox was the tramp.
Yeah, yeah.
And Neil was posh, and he'd read extracts from people's books, in a neckerchief and stuff. And it was and even the things, I go back, if somebody was to say to me, describe Soccer AM, I would say, okay, so here's the thing. We used to show new shirts. If new shirts were launched, why not show them? But instead of Tim just saying, here's the new Swindon Town home and away shirt, he'd say, right, Neil, you're Elton John. And Toby, you're Kiki D.
Yeah.
And we're going to play Don't Go Breaking My Heart. And you two are going to wear the Swindon Town shirts. So they would be dancing to Don't Go Breaking My Heart as we're saying, here are the new Swindon Town shirts.
Yeah.
For no reason. But that wasn't even the gag. Somebody else would then be David Furnish.
Yeah.
But of course, he was David Furniture because it was Soccer AM. And halfway through the Don't Go Breaking My Heart, he would come on and get insanely jealous.
Yeah.
Of Sandy Shaw.
Amazing.
And a little fight would break out. Brilliant. This was just to show Swindon Town shirts.
How was it?
And we got away with it.
That's it. I mean, how was it being part of that when it is a show that is so free in that way, but that also means it's going to be fairly hit and miss. But there's a good chance lot of the stuff you do is going to miss completely. So how was that as a, it must have been exciting to be part of because it's a live show as well that we've got 20 ideas on today's show. Some of them are going to be better than we thought. And some of them, we're just going to go, oh, well, how did that happen?
The good thing about the, oh, how did that happen moments were we'd do that live on air. If something bombed, the camera would just cut back to us sitting on the sofa and we'd all go, oh, God, oh, that was such a good idea yesterday in the script meeting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, we won't be doing that. Or Tim would go, no, we're going to do it next week as well.
Yeah.
And sometimes someone would have a character. There was Fixtures Man. Fixtures Man was like fittings and fixtures.
Yeah.
So he was dressed like a DIY guy, somebody from B&Q, in a little shed. And the crux was he had the fixture lists, but he also had light fittings and bulbs and plugs and screws that. And the first week that we did, of course, they wheeled in this shed and he had his little catchphrase was like these and like these. The dog's scratching the door.
Here he is.
Yeah, he wants to stop it. Come on, all right.
This is the best a regular interlude.
Sorry.
The dogs, I love it.
And he died on his ass.
Yeah.
Horribly died on his ass. So Tim went, doing it again next week.
We'll do that regularly.
And the intro to it would be, this died on its ass last week, so we're making him do it again. Off you go. And he'd have his little script. Sometimes Tim would take auto cue away from them as well, because we all had auto, and he'd go, no, learn it. Yeah. So they'd fuck up.
I love it.
And then we'd all just give them pelters. And this is what he was so good at. Him and the crew were so good at taking that item that was shit.
Yeah.
And making it so shit that it was funny.
It's what made Tubes just amazing was when you realised that he really didn't want to be doing this most times. Like when you could suddenly see in his eyes, it's like he's having to take his shirt off and scream and do something crazy. It's like he just wants to get this over with. And that's what made it beautiful and hilarious.
Well, the whole reason he's called Tubes is because one week in the script meeting, we were going to play the game outside, the end game that the fans of the week, it's always kicking a ball through a hole or something. And one week Tim said, Peter the test tube baby. Yeah, I like that. Peter the test tube baby. Right, you're a baby and you're really happy that you finally come out of your test tube. So you shake a can of beer and spray it all over yourself. And that was just to dress the set.
Brilliant.
wasn't it?
Logical and simple, right? It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, because his Tubes' his real name is Peter, and that's how he ended up being called Tubes.
I love it.
Because he was Peter the Test Tube, and every Saturday he used to have to come out in a nappy and pour a can of beer over his head.
Completely against his wish or will or desire to do so, it would feel as well. So how was it? I mean, you said that you were the first that Tim wanted to get rid of originally, but then you were very much embedded in it. And I mean, 22 years was...
Would have been 23 if I'd now, because we're in September.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But it is a very... And I think something that people who haven't watched it will... Until you get to know it and get to know the warmth and character of it, it's a laddie atmosphere.
Yeah.
How was that at the front of that? And you've got things like, particularly as said, as not that you were ever a raging feminist, but you are a woman on a show that's quite a laddie. You had Socorettes for years, which was a really popular bit, but some people would question. And this is a weird bit because I've not talked about this, but are you guys... got me to write a poem once for a Socorette who'd said that her favourite artist was Scroobius Pip. And I wrote this poem, I think 2 years after that, and we ended up going out for like a good two-year serious big relationship.
Oh, wow.
Huge, like at the
so
time.
You've also had a Socorette.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like most of the crew.
Yeah. Exactly.
Rocket married one.
Brilliant.
And Smithy... Smithy was in Adam Smith, Baby Elvis, whatever.
Yeah.
He was in a serious 2.5 year relationship with Socorette.
And that's it. That's what I wanted to clarify. It wasn't some kind of, a Socorette lights me fling. It was like, no, we proper got into, it was a serious thing. And it's just, it's amazing. But that's a weird thing.
Fanny.
That's, again, out of context. You're just right. So they get a pretty girl to walk up and down in a tight top.
Yeah.
You're like,
Fanny.
Right, that's not acceptable at all, right? But again, it's that weird thing that in that show so much was so surreal and so odd that it made sense.
And when I think back now that, because they used to send in photographs of themselves. And they all used to send in photographs of themselves in bra and pants.
Yeah.
Like, we it wasn't a prerequisite. We just used to say, we need a Socorette every week.
Yeah.
We just And the thing is, it's television. Boys like looking at pretty girls, but girls like looking at pretty girls because girls go, oh, her calves are chunky because that's what girls do. And it was for both.
Yeah.
And
it was made into, again, the surrealness of it. The fact that Tim would do the catwalk, it became this thing that it was more about Tim getting up and strutting and being Tim and showing off kind of thing than it was particularly even about here's a pretty girl. Do you know what I mean? It was a weird balance.
And he used to flirt badly.
Yeah.
And genuinely badly.
Because
he's a bad flirt. So that was all part of the charm as well. He'd drop his pen and go to pick it up and
do a
half look up their skirt.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was you never went, disgusting.
That's unacceptable. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was just odd.
It's a wonderful show in that, as I said, 90% of it, you put it on paper and you're like, that's not a show. That doesn't work, or it's not funny, or it's this or that. But it was just, it was amazing. So how was it when it was at its kind of a peak? It felt like when it was you and Tim, it was really at its peak.
Yeah.
And when Tim left, it took a little while to get back, but then was up again. And how was it when Tim left then? Particularly, as I said, I didn't know that it was kind of his... He'd taken over the direction of it at the start. He'd come in and said, I want to do this show.
It was weird. It was like a breakup.
Yeah.
It was like a breakup. I kind of had half an inkling. I just remember him starting to... He wanted to do his... the thing is if you have an idea at Sky and do it at Sky, it then becomes Sky's property.
Right.
So it's like any artist is... and Tim in essence, so all of the things that he was doing, and he left to set up Channel B, and oh my god, he was just 5 years too early, because basically he started an internet channel, because also there's no advertising restrictions on internet channel. He'd sit there with a can of Pepsi in front of him going, this is brilliant, whereas you have all these restrictions on TV. So he started this Channel B where he'd do live content every day, and there were sketches and there were bands, and they'd stream a bit of a live gig from the Hammersmith Apollo that night or something, and it didn't catch.
Yeah, the timing just wasn't quite right. Yeah,
whereas now you just think, oh, it was all there. Yeah. And it was just all there and it didn't catch any. Because people still go, why did Tim leave Soccer AM to do cooking on Channel 4?
Yeah.
Well, and you go, no, he didn't. He left to do Channel B and he...
I think people miss the complete logic in it anyway, that is the show he does on Channel 4. It's the same as Soccer AM in that it's not really about cooking. It's about the bands and the comedians. It's like he's gone, right, well, Soccer AM worked and it's not really about, it's about football, but it's not, it's about the guests and this and that. And they did essentially exactly the same, except replaced cooking with, or replaced football with cooking.
Yeah.
So it's not that weird a jump. Everyone was like, that's a crazy, that's insane. It's like, it's a Channel 4 at that point, I wanted a cooking show.
Wait,
so you go in and say.
First.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
it
yeah,
moved,
yeah.
It was called, what's it called now? Sunday Brunch.
It's Sunday Brunch now, isn't it? And it was called
Something for the Weekend.
Something for the Weekend,
for
that's
weekend.
Right.
Yeah. But it's just, it's the same as Soccer AM, that you just switch it on and you're noodling about the kitchen and you're making your breakfast and it's just a completely watchable show.
And from a pitching point of view, it feels like it said, so what do you want? Oh, we want a cooking show. Oh, yeah, it's a cooking show then. So it's not a cooking show. It's still, I want to get the bands on that I want. And Soccer AM, again, particularly when I was, or when I first came on, and even more so a few years in, it was one of the last places that bands could go and get coverage and do stuff. It was Jules Holland, and that's it.
Yeah.
And it's why when... when we signed our deal, when we had a TV plugger and stuff, and I was like, "Oh no, I just emailed because the first time I came on, I must have been signed, but I didn't have any kind of pluggers or anything. I just emailed in going, I'm a fan of the show. Is all right if I come on?" And they went, "Yeah, all right."
Yeah, all right then.
And then that's happened. Yeah. That's how it's happened every time since. It's literally they've just kind of it's been a text or an email saying, "Are you about?" Yeah, yeah. All right, I'll pop on.
And when people come in as well, and I always. It depends. Some people get it, and there are some people who've never seen the show, and they're drifting about in the corridor, and you can see them looking around going, is this professional?
Yeah.
Because it is just a bit shit, bollocks, scramble. Don't get me wrong. During the week, those boys graft, and some of them don't even go home on a Friday night to make sure. So everything, all the output, all the content has been produced to the best degree.
Yeah.
But just the wandering about with people. Oh, do you want a cup of tea? Oh, yes, please. Oh, yeah, there's a little kitchenette down the end. Yeah, pop the kettle on.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of thing. And so I remember somebody once said, can I get a bit of breakfast? Can I get a bacon sandwich? And somebody went, I'll go and have a look.
I'll see what I can find.
See what I can find. And they came back with a box of chips.
I love it. But it's meant that the people I've generally enjoyed the most as a fan are people who are there enjoying. I always remember Tom Rosenthal being a favourite because he was just so excited to be there and so happy. And Stevie as well. Stevie, we met because of Soccer AM because I was in the street once.
I was disappointed that you didn't tell this story on his podcast.
Yeah.
This is a brilliant story.
I was outside a gig. I think I was going to see a Russell a Brand and I'm there with my mate Kelly Marcel, who's been on the podcast, and I see Stephen Graham at the end of the street, and I'm the biggest fan. I loved him in Boardwalk Empire. I loved him in This Is England. I think he's amazing. And I nudged my mate Kelly and go, "Can you know us? Stephen Graham." And he walked past, and I kind of just looked, and then he walked past, and then he turned around and came back and said, "Mate, I just want to say, I've seen you on Soccer AM, and me and the wife have got your record, and big fan." And I then just exuded praise at him, going, That ending monologue in Boardwalk Empire on episode 5 was just amazing, this and that. And then we parted ways. But yeah, it was purely because of that.
And then you ended up on Soccer AM together, acting in the same thing.
That was it. As soon as on our first day on Taboo, we said, oh, we've got to go on Soccer AM when this comes out. Because again, we'd both been people who've been on, you know, some might say too much, but on regularly. So it's perfect. We've got to pop on.
And a lot of people don't, you know, when you say some might say too much, we do 43 shows a year. So we're on every week during the football season, plus a Christmas special.
And particularly in the day when it was 3 hours to fill every day as well. It's like, that's no, you need a decent amount of people on the sofa.
And you do. And you, and for us, we need our, the people that we love and our regulars. And you and Stephen were my absolute favourites.
Yeah, that's wicked.
Absolute favourites.
Yeah.
And if people say why, I go, well, I just, you don't know.
We wanted to be there.
Still, you got it.
My highlight memory was of all the times I came on, I didn't get a goal once except for one, and I scored, and it was the time that I was going Millwall West Ham straight after. So you guys had got me a taxi bike.
Yeah.
So I literally scored.
Oh my God,
and
got on
camera, you're talking to me. I put my little helmet on and get on the bike and go. Yeah. And I was like, I was literally halfway to Millwall or to wherever I was going, when, and I was like, right, well that all just happened, didn't it? It was all just so heat of the moment. It's like, wow, that was a thing.
That was the essence of the show. It's different now. Everything changes anyway. It's going to be a different beast,
of course,
over the course of 20 years. But social media, I'm not going to say spoiled, because, you know, you can't say social media spoiled, but we used to do things like Third Eye.
Yeah.
So if something was spotted on a Saturday or a Sunday, all week people would be saying to me, I can't wait to see the show on Saturday. I can't wait to see what you've done with XYZ, these little things that happened on the Saturday and the Sunday.
And again, you're completely right on that anyway, because it was Soccer AM was the first place the videos would go viral. The tractor guy.
Tim was the first person to put videos from mobile phones on telly. And because he asked for a piece of technology at Sky, and they said, and there's no point. They said, because it's pixelated. You can't. Yeah. And Tim said, if it's funny, people won't care. And so, and he used to shrink it down to a tiny little box in the middle of the screen and do a blue background and put stuff on that was funny. The guy trying to hang his coat up at the bottom of the banister. What's that got to do with football?
Yeah.
Guy hanging his coat up at the bottom of the banisters and just pissed, completely missed, and just slides down the whole thing, ends up in a heap on the floor with all the coats on top of him.
Yeah,
he put it on Soccer AM. Tractor Boy.
Tractor Boy was just the best ever. And again, it's got nothing to do with anything at all. No. Just a lad taking over his dad on the tractor.
Taking his dad in a tractor and going, people will quote it.
Yeah.
People will come up in the street and quote it.
And that's crazy to think that, that and Third Eye were the things that back in the day I would be tuning in the most excited for. And they are the things that social media has now taken away, because they'll go viral before we get
by
to
the time
next
it
week.
Gets to next week, there's nothing we can do with it.
Yeah.
There's nothing at all we can do with it. All sorts of little bits and pieces like that. We had the Save Chip campaign, which was just one of Tim's... Tim spoke to his mate and said, did you see the Liverpool game last night? And his mate said, no, the missus wanted to watch EastEnders, Coronation Street, whatever. Tim mentioned it on the Saturday. His guy's name was Chip. And he said, we should start a campaign. Save Chip, don't let Sarah win. Oh, my God. The next minute, there were banners at games. We
Amazing.
Had to make stickers, posters and badges and post them out to people.
Amazing.
Save Chip. Every time there was darts on the telly, all of the 180 signs would be Save Chip, don't let Sarah win. And even maybe 6-7 years after the campaign just naturally died a death, somebody would still be holding up a Save Chip sign at the darts. And things like that now, they happen too fast.
Yeah.
So if we started a Save Chip campaign within a week, because it would be all over Facebook and all over Twitter, it would be done. And then anybody doing Save Chip would get the, oh, do, delete.
Yeah.
You know, like the Kermit the Frog
thing. Yeah, yeah.
That Man City did a piss take of the Kermit the Frog in the cloak and something.
Yep.
And there were like 1,000 people underneath going, this is so embarrassing, delete. Because the Kermit the Frog thing was about 3 weeks old.
Yeah.
So it's like, once it's...
There's no time for it anymore.
No. Fashion that thing, it's within, it's a week to a month time scale you've got to hit that thing. We ran Save Chip. We have to have a bulletin for it, news headlines. This is what happened. This person wrote to us.
Yeah.
And those days have gone. So that's another reason why Soccer AM is a completely different. And a lot of people do hark back to those days, me included.
Completely.
Hark back to those days where, and we got away with stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But again, that was the beauty of live TV and things like Sky. It was the whole ask for forgiveness rather than permission.
Yeah.
It's just kind of just do it and see what happens. And chances are no one's going to care, really. It's not the end of the world. No.
And the Heads of Skye, they didn't watch it. Well, they told us, they just said, oh, no, look, it's doing well. Yeah. So you just carry on.
Yeah, just keep going.
And it was almost like they didn't get involved, because if they did, they would have told us
that
we can't do this and we can't
do
that. And yeah.
So, I mean, we're over an hour now.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Start to round up. But, I mean, obviously, uncomfortable question, I guess, but how does it feel that this new season has come about? And it seemed to come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You and I spoke, and again, I don't know how much you want to say or can say or anything else, so we can make this a very brief conversation, but it seemed to come out of nowhere that it was just you weren't on Soccer M anymore.
Nobody knows if I jumped or if I was pushed.
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
And I had no... I'm one of those... You said something earlier that made me think, like, it's only a bloody telly show.
Yeah.
No one cares. Oh, you said about going back to work in HMV.
Yeah.
And I remember my agent saying, are you going to release a statement? And I went, why? She went, because you've been on telly for 22 years and it's going to come back on and you're not going to be there. And I went, people will care for 5 minutes and then they won't care anymore.
Yeah.
So it's not, I'm not that self-important to go, well, I need to release a press statement.
It is the nature. And again, the thing is as well, the people who will get in an uproar, I always use XFM as an example of when they switched to Radio X, and it was great uproar because they brought in Chris Moyles and Vernon Kay and things like that. And I understand the annoyance, but most of the people I was seeing saying, oh, it's ruined, blah, blah. It's like their answer was, when I used to listen to it 5 years ago, it was this. And it's like, well, you stop listening though. And with XFM, they did change that, but people like John Kennedy were still there in the evening and great people at night, but the daytime playlist had gone that way anyway. So I don't know. I guess if people are tuning in now and getting furious because it's changed so much and Helen isn't there, probably a lot of the things had changed already and have been that way over the last few seasons. And do you know what I mean? It is that weird. People like to get in uproar about things when...
It was so funny that when it was announced, there were a lot of people that said, God, I didn't even realise Soccer M was still on, because they'd watched in their teenage years and they're now adults.
I'd have that, and this is an odd thing, but I'd have that, and most times I'd tweet about it, I'd have a ton of people excited and I'd always have at least one person going, oh, is that still on? Which was always an annoying question to me, because it's like, well, I've just tweeted saying I'm going on, so you know it's still on. So
what's the point?
Don't bother tweeting me. It's a snarky, unnecessary comment. But yeah,
I feel a bit guilty because we've done over an hour now, and all I've done is how I've accidentally fallen into all of my jobs
it's a good room.
The animals, and I don't know. I suppose what it was is I was looking forward to this because we've always met professionally at Soccer AM, where I've been asking you half a dozen questions before we've run out of time.
I'm thinking,
brilliant, I'm going to be asking you loads of questions and finding out all the stuff.
Honestly, I think the main thing that I think has made this podcast work is that I was aware early on that I'm there every week. The guest is only there once. So it's why on my favourite episodes, I don't talk that much, because it's about the guest talking and being there and getting that story out. And that's what makes it engaging, I think.
Yes, but I listen to your podcasts because I like what you have to say.
Well, that is lovely. I appreciate that. Before we do round it up, I want to talk about, what's next is a vague question, but something...
And here's the quick answer. I don't know.
Yep, that's fair.
Kind of,
but that's
retired, I think. Don't know.
But what I like is you, from speaking to you when we were walking about around the farm, and speaking to you when you talk about stumbling from this job to that job and not having any notable skills and things like that, in your opinion, is you say that, yet we were talking about when you did a horse race and came third behind some top level people. I know that. You play a bit of darts and instantly at a very high level on that. You've done all right in poker. So it's one of them where you kind of, it's like, it seems that anything you do, just go, I don't know how to do this, but I'll give it a go. You do apply yourself and seem
I
to
did
excel.
All right in poker on the same basis that you did all right in that audition.
Yeah.
For ye oldie medievally.
Right, yeah.
I went into poker and the experts were telling, I've been a card player all my life. This is what people just went, oh, you just sat down and you just, that would never happen again because you were playing hands that people wouldn't normally play.
Because what was it? It was Poker Million.
It was Poker Million, yeah. And I won over $500,000. I won $515,000 over the qualifiers and I came runner up, $400,000. And people got a bit bitter about it, going, but you got so lucky because you played with hands that wouldn't normally be played with. And I said, well, isn't that funny how I won all that money by being lucky throughout all of those, the qualifying table, then the first round, then the quarterfinals, the semifinals, and onto the final table. If everybody plays the same way, you have no edge. And I do know that in poker, I either go out within the first six hands or I win it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'll look at my hand and go, well, it's a pair of fours. I'm going to gamble on that. It's a pair of fours. Same with any gambling. You either win or you lose.
And again, it's the same as that first audition for Nickelodeon. The kind of advantage is not caring that much.
Going,
all right, well, fuck it. Let's do it. Yeah. Let's give that a go. And that either pays off, as you said, or it goes horrible.
I know we've got to wrap up. One very quick. No, when go. I got into the semi-final of Poker Million, and I think I'd already played a table, and they classed my chair. The commentators said, we've got to class it as an empty chair because nobody can come off the back of one game and sit down straight away and play like another five-hour game because your mindset changes between the first six people and then playing heads up. So they said, well, let's just dismiss her. So I'm playing, and there was this guy on the end, and then all of a sudden it's got to me, and I've looked, and the three cards have come down in the middle, and I had a pair of tens, and he went all in, and I went, yeah, fuck it. Go on then. All in. And the whole table, I heard this little like that. He turned over ace queen. The rest of the cards came down in the middle and my pair of tens held up. Bye bye.
Yeah.
The guy next to me, after he'd done his very silent exit of shame, after 10 hands, this was 10 hands into the game, the guy next to me went, you do know who that was, don't you? And I went, nope. And he went, that's Ram Vaswani. He's one of Europe's top poker players. And I just turned around and went, well, he won't today, was he? And the rest of them shit themselves.
I love it.
And I won the table.
Yeah.
Because I just went, well, I beat him. Today I beat him.
Let's give it a go.
Let's give it a go. Yeah.
I love that. So, I mean, that's, I'd imagine, is going to be you say you don't know what's next and you've not got a plan, but you've never really had a plan.
This
and
it's
served
okay
so far, isn't it? So,
you know, I've never really thought about it like that.
It's kind of okay, isn't it? To sit there and go, I've not got a plan. It's like, well, you could have said that 25, 30 years ago when you
were. Right. I spent 22 years on the telly by accident.
Yeah.
DJ by accident. Fed Sea Lions. Well, I did go for that job, I suppose. Yeah. But it was just one of those, feed sea lions. Let's sounds like a laugh. Give it a go. Yeah, I don't know.
I love it. Well, thank you very much for inviting me along and showing me around and meeting all the different animals and all the wonders. And we'll talk again soon.
I hope so.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
You've been listening to Scrooby's Picks, The Splashdom Pieces.
There we go. I told you that was lovely. I also warned you that we were doing it on the farm and it would get messy. So there was constant interruptions. I'm surrounded by dogs at the moment, actually. There's four dogs. Oh, actually, there are two pairs of dogs. So two of them ones that look like wolves. You know the ones. And then just two black kind of, I don't know what they are, just two black dogs. Two black dogs to signify depression. I didn't see there was another dog, but a woman is carrying it under her arm and it matches her outfit. So I hadn't noticed it was there. It blended in. I hope you enjoyed that chat. And I hope the constant dog interruptions weren't too much for you. I don't think they would be, but I'm gonna go. I'll catch you next week. If all goes to plan, next week could well be the biggest guest I've ever had on the Distraction Pieces podcast. So that's exciting, isn't it? Right, I should stop talking now because people are looking at me weird. I should let you know I am, of course, recording this topless. I bought a shirt, and then as soon as I got to this canyon bit, I whipped it off. And I've been doing... along the route, there's these kind of gates to walk through. I've been doing pull-ups on the gates. I like a complete jerk. So imagine that. Imagine that embarrassment. A pale, pasty, 6'4" Brit, hairy Brit, strolling along topless, doing pull-ups as if he's showing off, smiling at dogs, and then getting to the top, sitting down, and pulling out a microphone to record his thoughts, his observations on the scene. I'll go now. I love LA, and I'm looking forward to... I'm visiting New York on this trip. Hopefully I'm recording two podcasts there. I was meant to be recording a podcast in LA, but so far it's fallen through. I'm hoping I hear from the chap tonight, where we're going to record it a few weeks back in London, but it fell through, and now I'm in LA. I was like, look, holla, and we had it lined up, but then some stuff came up. So yeah, I'm hoping to get one more in while I'm in LA, and then two, maybe three in New York, then fly home and record two that week as well. It's just hectic, guys. It's exciting. Exciting times. 10 million downloads. Thank you all for supporting. If you get a chance, if you could follow the Distraction Pieces podcast and Distraction Pieces Network pages on social media. So Distraction Pieces Network on Instagram, DP Network, I think, or D Pieces Network on Twitter. And Distraction Pieces podcast on Facebook, but it's a network page. But I'd set it up already. If you follow all of them, we post all these cool videos. This guy John Harris, who's fantastic, he makes these little clip videos of each episode, and they're really good. They kind of just give you a little taster of what is in there. So check them out. In fact, one went a bit mental this week because of last week's episode with Soad McKenna, or the week before, sorry. And there was a quote where she said that religion isn't radicalising people. People are radicalising religion. And it was a wonderful soundbite that was part of a far more wonderful extended conversation. And I had to encourage people that before they comment on the soundbite in agreement or disagreement to listen to the whole episode, because it was an amazing chat. I'm so proud of it. So, yeah, anyway, I was calling this a day. But I've rambled on a bit more because it's eased up on dogs, and I want more dogs to come before I walk down the canyon, because I like to walk down amongst dogs as if I've got a little pack. There's a bark. Did you hear that? That's a dog attacking another dog in a friendly manner. I'm sure. Oh no, he's killed him. That's a fatality. Dog on dog crime. Okay, guys, I'll talk to you next week. See you later. Bye.
Hey marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.